Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Make magic happen with your recording box.
What?
I said make magic happen with your recording box.
I will turn off speakerphone. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast. We've got Tim here. We've got Brooke here. We've got Chris here. And we've got Purnell here. How is everybody doing?
I long for the days of speakerphone.
No speakerphone.
Well, who's it?
I'm good.
Tim, how are you?
Oh, it's awful. It's the worst week of the year.
Oh, that's right. School system, Tim. I like how no one's given me spoilers as to Tim's specific job, even though each week I collect a few more clues. And I could just look it up, but like, what's the fun in that?
I think he's a spy for a certain school district, but he won't tell us which.
I'm a spy for the school district?
Yes, you're spying on one school district for another school district.
Football pranks are getting crazy, I tells ya.
They generally just tell each other what's going on, I hate to tell you. Like, there's really no cloak and dagger going on.
Tim's like sweating through his clothes because he's a spy and you just outed him on live air. And he knows that their superintendent or whatever is listening.
Brooke knows what I'm talking. Brooke knows the deal. See, yeah, you can't fool me. I'm hip to you. I'm hip to you, square.
Brooke doesn't know the deal because she said someone is listening, and that is just false.
I said Brooke knows the deal. It's 100%. She's on board.
No, she said someone was listening, and that's just wrong.
How Purnell continues to spin doctor for me. You know, I know what's going on. Reading was unique. Like, this, I want this guy in my court.
I'm already there. I have season tickets.
We are building a rich narrative.
Yeah. Adding to our lore.
Chris, how are you doing? You're moving, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to find my mouse pad right now. Because my mouse goes crazy when it's just on my desk.
Set some cheese out. He'll find it.
What's on everybody's mouse pad? You guys got vanity mouse pads like me? Mine's a JoJo's pad. Surprise. Nice.
It's just black.
Oh, man.
Mine is ancient. It's a freaking Ark the Lad mouse pad I got from E3 back in like 2002.
I've got the most embarrassing one.
Nice.
Who remembers Record of Agarest War?
Oh, I do.
Oh, you got the breast pad. It's upstairs.
Obviously, we all do, Joe.
I've got the boobie
mouse alive pad. Ain't nobody alive haven't heard of Record of Agarest War. Come on, who do you take us for?
Got the boobie pad. I'm on like my fourth one. Nice. I keep buying collector's editions just for the mouse pads. Nice.
Wait, how are you on your fourth one? Like, because four copies of old. That game? Hello?
What?
They get old, and they get, like, gunky. And...
Oh, no, I took you, like, hyper-literally. I assumed you were saying you've purchased four copies of Record of Agarest War to replace the booby pad with the same booby pad from the same game, CE.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I was right. Why?
Because I like the mouse pad.
But there's other games that also have booby mouse pads.
I don't know if there's any other good booby mouse pads. I know the one in that collector's edition is a solid quality, so if I see one for $20, I'll jump on it.
I can tell you right now,
I need to expand my mouse pad taste.
A titty mouse pad out there, and I'm sure the tit mouse pad technology has advanced in the past how many years?
At least 15.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more in storage, so I'm still good for a while.
I like how you think ahead. I do that with all my favorite shit, too. My friends are like, this is some Virgo shit. If I like something, I'll buy three or four of it because I know I'm going to wear it out in a few years. So I'm digging what you're talking about.
I mean, if you see a mouse pad for $15-$20 cheap enough, why not, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't always buy the full collector's edition.
No, I was just saying, I have a set going upstairs, and I wasn't even trying to get them. I just happened to have a second booby mouse pad that came with a completely different game.
Nice.
I like that Tim called it specifically a tit mouse pad, because now I'm like online looking for like mouse pads that I can get a picture of a tit mouse on, which is
that's
a bird,
really
by the way.
Good. Yes. Oh my God, I didn't even think of
neither a mouse nor a tit.
That's amazing.
Yes, exactly. A tit is a bird. but
yeah, it's something.
A titmouse. A titmouse is a specific bird.
And we learn something every week. This is amazing. Do. Before we stop talking about booby mouse pads, I am required now as the JoJo's guy to say the most popular JoJo's mouse pad is a booby mouse pad. It's Joseph Joestar in the episode. He's dressed as a woman. And I will now drop y'all a picture to make you look at it. This isn't the one I have, but maybe someday.
Was he cross-dressing, or was it one of those like weird pocket episodes where he got hit with a magic spell that actually converted him temporarily? And he was like, whoa, I love these. Make a mouse pad.
Hey, he's definitely cross-dressing, and it's really beautiful. I'm going to go ahead and paste it in here for you.
I love these. Make a mouse pad.
I think I'm just curious more so, not so much that the cross-dressing is a thing. I get that, but where did the boobies come from?
That's a really good question. I want to know, too, now. But yeah, Joseph Joestar is not a feminine-looking woman, so it's an iconic piece, and now I've shared my pain with y'all.
That mouse pad's pretty great.
One day, man.
I
feel bad that you didn't it in Twitch chat, because now no one knows what we're looking at.
I'll do that too. Good point. I just joined the chat.
Funny enough, the only my answer is also like Tim's. It's just a black mouse pad. But the most interesting one that I have, I actually got from Joe, because it was part of the prize pack for naming the podcast, and it's a lenticular Final Fantasy IX mouse pad that apparently was a pre-order bonus with the game. Is that right, Joe?
I don't remember. Probably.
Oh, I mean, why would it be a pre-order bonus with a different game, right?
True.
But yeah, it's lenticular, so that means that it doesn't actually work with my mouse's laser.
Shit.
It would work with a ball mouse, which is what we had back in the day, but I had to use a standard.
Remember ball mice?
Yes, I still I have one for the PlayStation.
Really? What do you use it for?
There's a few point-and-click games that you can play on the PlayStation, including both Discworld games, which are what I specifically bought it for. But it is itself a special edition mouse that came with a collector's edition of Tokimeki Memorial. Huh. So it was for that originally.
Interesting. And,
yeah, so it's a nice little mouse with the... I know everybody's going to hate me for not remembering the most popular girl in Tokimeki Memorial's name, but her face is on
damn right.
Fucking
Sowery? Is it Sowery?
Don't even talk to me anymore. Jesus.
I have to look it up now. It's Sowery, though. I am owed an apology.
I thought you were cool, Chris.
I know.
You guys are awful.
You were all right, terrible. I've never even played a Tokimeki Memorial, so I got nothing to talk about. So you
I have not played it myself either, although I did find out there's a fully translated ROM of the Super Nintendo version that I have now, so I'm gonna play it at some point, spoilers, but because it's in Japanese, like it's a very wordy romance VN fully in Japanese, so of course I haven't actually played it. But it's like, it's such a big deal. Like the main girl in the first game is such a big deal that I'm embarrassed actually that I forgot it. I watched a 6 hour long video talking about that game, so I should remember
six
at least something.
6 hours?
Yeah.
It took 6 hours.
Well, so that would go into a whole nother tangent, but if you've ever heard the name Tim Rogers, then you would believe me that he made a 6 hour long video of just him talking about Tokimeki Memorial. That includes 2 full playthroughs of the game.
Jeez.
What about the same guy that made the 6 hour video about the Doctor Strange movie?
Maybe. Maybe. He worked for Kotaku for a while, and he's a translator now. Translated 2 fantastic games, so I'm a fan of his, but he is an interesting internet feller. Anyway.
Internet fellers.
Carnage is saying that the episode thumbnail is going to be the mouse pad, and the title will be Record of Aga Breast War.
I'm glad you made us abreast of the situation there.
Yeah.
Nice. I think it should be a picture of a titmouse.
Thanks.
The 6 hour video I'm seeing on YouTube about Doctor Strange was not Tim Rogers. I think he only really talks about video games.
Okay. So someone else is out there.
More people making six-hour videos. Okay.
There's so many videos of people just unhinged talking about, and like fully edited too, with like B rolls and like, you know, fancy cameras.
I love that you made sure to confirm they're unhinged. It's not just some guys. No, this fucker's unhinged. Check it out.
Well, I liked the Tokimeki Memorial thing. I mean, I was doing something else. That's why I watched the whole 6-hour video in one go, despite several warnings throughout the video that you should not watch it all at once and you should take a break every hour or so. But he just really wanted to. He didn't want to mess with making it an episodic thing. So
fair.
Yeah. But I was doing something. I can't remember what. I was like playing a game or something. And I was like, you know, I could just be here for this whole thing. So I did.
Damn.
And
shall be.
And that is my two experiences with Tokimeki Memorial is owning a mouse and watching probably the longest single video game review I've ever heard outside of the SML podcast.
Oh, dig. We knew that was coming.
Had to bring it back around.
I think our longest one is 40 minutes.
Ooh. Ooh.
What was the game?
No, it was Glenn Case. Talking.
The guy was named Glenn Case.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, who's this Glenn Case fella?
I was thinking, what system is Glenn Case on?
Sequel to the Silver Case.
Oh.
Jesus. Anyway, should we talk reviews? Because we got a lot tonight.
Cowabunga it is.
Yes, indeed. First game to talk about tonight is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Cowabunga Collection, developed by Digital Eclipse and Konami, published by Konami Digital Entertainment, released August 30th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Cowabunga Collection, assembles 13 classic Ninja Turtles games by Konami in one incredible package. This collection provides a unique opportunity for gamers to experience these immensely popular and very influential games and includes a fantastic set of new quality of life features. Tim, tell us about your time with the Cowabunga Collection.
I mean, that pretty much sums it all up right there. I mean, that the copy is all true. There you go. This is, a couple months ago, we got TMNT Shredder's Revenge, which was like a modern sequel to these games. And now here, a couple months later, we have these games, a collection of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video games from 30 years ago when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was arguably at the height of its power. It's certainly the height of its video game power, what was 30 years ago when these games were and this franchise was a big deal. Nowadays, well, I don't know that. I mean, that game was good, so kind of a big deal, but you know, for the most part, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video games have not meant much between the years of like 1995 and 2022. So there was a break. So what you get here, you get yourself two arcade games. You get the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, also known as TMNT, the arcade game. You get Turtles in Time, which is the second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game, both very fondly remembered. You get the NES Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle trilogy, which includes the infamous Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one with its infamous dam level where you have to swim around and defuse bombs.
That dam level.
NES adaptation of the arcade game, which includes two completely new levels and not four-player co-op. The NES-only Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 The Manhattan Project, which is another NES beat-em-up with an absolute banger of a soundtrack. You get the Super Nintendo version of Turtles in Time, also known as Turtles and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4. In that case, you get the sort of Genesis version of that, which is Hyperstone Heist.
Like a remix, kind of.
Yeah, the way in which Super Nintendo and Genesis versions were similar but still different sometimes, and sometimes just completely fucking different in that era, which was awesome. My favorite era of games just being just wildly different on two different platforms. It was a lot of fun, and you get to experience it here. You get three Game Boy games, oft overlooked in any kind of mainstream collection, I feel like. I don't remember. Like, yeah, you get three original Game Boy side-scrolling action games, and you get three versions of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighter, which is not a great fighting game, but is fun, and that's what matters. You get the NES, the Super Nintendo, and Genesis versions, each of which are different in their own special ways.
I would argue that the NES Tournament Fighters is the best one-on-one fighting game available on the NES in America, at least. I would make that bold hot take claim.
Is it also the only one?
It is! You caught my joke.
I had to think about it, like maybe some like early, like Karateka is on there or something. I don't know. Anyways, in addition to you get the US version of all these games, and you also get the Japanese version of all these games, which you can just switch between with a touch of a button on the game select. So that's the games, and those games are of varying degrees of quality, but you know, it is comprehensive for that era of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The stuff that makes this package attractive, like really attractive, is everything else I'm about to talk about. So each game has a submenu for enhancements before you launch the game. And these can range from anything from just like, okay, you know, God mode, or easier modes, to quality of life things. Like you can turn off the sprite flicker and slowdown in all the NES games, so they just play completely smoothly.
Ooh.
Yeah. They have things that modify the inputs for some of, I think it's Turtles in Time and maybe the arcade version of the arcade game. They all kind of mush together, but you know, one that it like changes how like the dash inputs work in Turtles in Time, that changes how the jump kicks work in one of the brawlers. You can input the attack lower in the jump, so you can jump kick faster and like at a different angle, which is cool. Just stuff like that. Like in the fighting games, you can just have the bosses unlocked for versus play right off the bat. Just all kinds of like fun little stuff to muck with the game, which is great. Each game also has a video playthrough, which was something they also did in the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection, where every game you can just touch a button and watch a video of the game being played. You don't even have to play it. You can just watch it to see the game. But if you suddenly decide, crap, I wish I was playing this, you just hit a button and then you start playing the playthrough, which is just like what they did in the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection. It is something I think is a just tremendously cool feature. To play with, just watch a playthrough, maybe just fast forward it to a certain point and dive right into the game. Oh yeah, like all of the all those enhancement menus have stage selects for pretty much any game where that is relevant. You can pick what stage you start on. Also cool. And you can rewind. Obviously you can't fast forward, that's not how time works, but you can rewind. Well, it's the thing, like if you're watching the playback of a video and you dive into it and start playing, you can't like jump back onto the video to start playing forward. If you change your mind, you're just stuck there. And it has, you know, save states and controller options and stuff like that that you would come to expect. So along with all that, there is a very expansive archive of just Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles artifacts, which is you get the, you know, scans of all the boxes, Japanese and US. You get scans of all the manuals, Japanese and US. There's a cover gallery from various runs of the comic book over the years. There is...
I gotta say, my hopes were like super high for a second that they were full comics in there. And then I realized they were just covers. And I was like, I can't understand that.
Well, I started to lose my mind when I saw that they had like cartoons in there, and it's just still shots from the various cartoons over the years. So I'm like, is there fucking episodes of the cartoon in here? And there isn't, which is, you know, once you get your hopes up, it's kind of like, oh, but it's, you know, ultimately, there are over 3,700 artifacts in this archive, which also includes like design docs for some of the games. They don't have them for every game, but they do for some of them. And they have they've built a search engine into the game where you can say, okay, I want to see design docs for, like, what do you have for the arcade games or the Game Boy games or the NES games? And it will show you what they have, and you can just go right and just jump straight to them, which is, when you have that much stuff to look through, is a fantastic tool for just, like, whatever it is that you want to thumb through on that particular day. But again, like, 3,700 designs.
Yeah, it's going to keep you busy. You're going to be looking at stuff forever. They have a music player in there, too, with, like, all of the game's soundtracks.
And, yeah, like, I was in there earlier just, like, thumbing through, like, the design sketches for the levels in the first Game Boy game. And they're just like, all in there. You can just, like, go right through them. It's just really cool stuff. And then on top of all that, there is online play that is available for, you don't just have to play on the couch. You can play online.
There's four games that are online. Ninja Turtles Arcade, Turtles in Time Arcade, Hyperstone Heist, and Tournament Fighters Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah. How selective.
Yeah, I don't know why they chose the ones they chose and why they didn't do all of them that supported multiplayer. I'm guessing technical issues or technical reasons.
Good luck getting through the Manhattan Project on NES without a second player.
Well, hey, guess what? One of the enhancements is an easy mode that is built into the game but not available in the game proper.
I like God mode in the arcade game where fucking Rocksteady pops up, you punch him once and he's down.
I thought that was cool that apparently they had an easy mode for Manhattan Project, but it just wasn't selectable in the game, but you can select it in this cheat menu and play through it on easy mode, so you perhaps can get through Manhattan Project with just one player.
And if you get rewarded with an achievement on Xbox or a trophy on PlayStation, which is, I think, my only real gripe with this game. The achievements on, you know, Steam, Xbox, and PlayStation are just lazy. There's only 13 of them, and it's to beat each of the games.
Wow, that sounds like an easy easy platinum to me.
I mean, yeah, possibly. I mean, if you could get through the first game on NES, but it's just, it seems lazy. I wish they would have put more care into the achievements. I wish they would have had more per game. Like, give us a couple, like, 2-3 achievements per game, and give us more than 13 for how much is in this. I just think they skimped out on achievements, and they could have done better.
Oh, I don't give a shit.
Me neither.
Me treater?
Well, we have a lot of listeners who do care about achievements, so I do have to bring them up. And I think in this day and age, that's something you have to consider with achievements, with reviewing games, is a lot of people are in it for achievements. And we've reviewed games that are pretty much solely for achievements. There's publishers that churn out stuff here,
so that's not a concern.
Yeah. Well, I played it on Xbox, so... Well, the game's $40. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, it's worth buying. It's a great package. It's wonderful. Like, yeah, if you were already interested in it, you should buy it, because it's great. It's a great piece of gathered Ninja Turtles nostalgia. You get those games just, like, at your fingertips, easy to play, and enjoy.
And not spending $150 for Radical Friggin' Rescue.
Yeah.
Wow, is it that much now?
Yeah, I saw it at a convention on Saturday, and it was selling for $150 without a box or instructions. It didn't even have the plastic case anymore.
Wow.
I felt like I spent a lot on it, but I spent like half that much. It's a great Radical. Game, though. It's Turtlevania.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a Metroidvania done with the Ninja Turtles. It's nice. Absolutely worth it. Before
Metroidvania
out.
Was a coined term.
Yes, although it does, you know... It was made by Konami, so obviously it does, you know, clearly borrow some elements of Castlevania, including the music.
Right. But, does that mean we should actually be calling them Turtlevanias?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, that's what we call that one.
That works.
But yeah, that
game's around like $90 card only. That dude was gouging his ass off.
Doesn't surprise me, to be honest with you.
Convention pricing.
Yeah, convention pricing is always like absurd.
$3,500 for Goemon's Great Adventure. I've seen that one convention.
Oh, yeah. I bought that for $40, but not in a box.
I got it off of Guzex. Mm-hmm.
Really? I remember that site.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild, some of the shit I got off of Guzex that I later sold for a much higher price. Like Earthbound. All right, anyways, next game.
Anyway, next game to talk about is Brock the Investigator, developed and published by Cowcat, released August 26th on Steam for $19.99. The very first punch and click, Brock is an innovative adventure mixed with beat-em-up and RPG elements in a grim world where animals have replaced mankind. What kind of detective will you be? Brooke, how's Brock?
You know, I'm not looking at the Twitch chat, but I'm really hoping that I can beat Carnage to saying Brock the Investigator, more like Brooke the Investigator.
You beat him.
I was thinking about it. Well, when I saw the game was like Brooke.
Dude, I thought about it. As soon as Joe offered me this, I was like, I got to take this, you know, no questions asked, because Brock is actually a fun nickname of mine from my past. It harkens back to my school days when everybody was like, you're not playing Pokemon right. And I'd be like, dude, I know. I don't want to be the very best like no one ever was. I just want to hang out with my Pokemon. Just want to make sure they're happy, have a good time. But that's a story for another day. That's a different game. I was pumped to see Tim covering this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles collection tonight. I didn't know that was coming until earlier today. And I was just delighted because I happen to be ending this review with a Leatherhead reference from the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoon. Far away my favorite character of that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoon, by the way.
He's in Turtles in Time. He's in Turtles in Time and Hyperstone Heist.
I'm so glad you instantly know who I'm talking about, because Chris, I was thinking,
yes.
love that guy. But I'm like, when I think of that character, I actually think of Chris here, because I know he's one of the only people out there who will take one look at that character and go, this is actually Justin Wilson, the Cajun chef and comedian, the late great. And I'm not even kidding. He's definitely like based off of like the first guy that popularized Guarantee is
Justin. I guarantee. Wilson. Oh yeah.
Dude. But that's a story. That's another story for another day. I'm getting all sidetracked here. But this is an awesome game. This is not just a point-and-click adventure. They didn't just say that in the pitch and write it into the game later in a phoned-in way to trick people into trying it. This game is very well thought out and executed, like, just really well-done experience. It has a lot of options if you don't want too different of an experience from the classic point-and-click. You can turn off the fighting, just play it as a point-and-click, and if you keep the fighting on, there's a couple different difficulties there to play with. Normally, if it was just me and I wasn't playing it to review it, I might just turn off fighting from the beginning because, you know, not really a fighter, more of a hug it out guy, just hang out with my Pokemon eating snacks guy. But I didn't turn fighting off, so I could see what it was like for review purposes, and I'm really glad I did. It adds so much to the game, it breaks it up, and it was actually just really fun for me. And I played it on normal difficulty, feeling very lazy and sleepy, and I was fine, so it's definitely accessible enough, even if you choose to embrace the way of the punch. At the same time, it doesn't hold your hand too much in the mystery adventure department. It's not going to make you stuck if you don't get one thing, like so many point-and-clicks do. But you are going to have to use your noggin and your common sense a little. One look at the art for this game, I didn't think I'd be into it aesthetically. I didn't love it. I thought I would, like, overlook the cartoonishness for the interesting concept of the game. But it actually won me over art style-wise within, like, 5 minutes of the intro. I'm now fully here for this cartoon animal world now in every way, and I'm as surprised as anybody about that. The world and the character design has the charm of, like, old school cartoons from my childhood, like Hanna-Barbera and shit, but, like, actually just way better illustrated, because it's, like, a zillion years later, and people who made this game are actually just really smart and funny and cool. I'm not normally one for anthropomorphic casts, although I never kink shame, but I love this cast, and I think that them being big goofy animals is just like somehow immaculately done here.
Remember when anthropomorphic like creatures didn't immediately bring up kink? Remember, does anybody else remember that? I do, because I remember the Turtles 30 years ago, and it
was that reminds me of my childhood as well. That takes
my entire pre-internet childhood, and then the day I got online, it was all ruined.
Yeah, the internet has ruined all of us.
I was babysitting once, and then the mom wanted to text me about how she took the kid's phone. It just, his first search ever was Pokemon boob. So don't get me started. Yes. I mean, I kind of like the timeline we've turned out in. But yeah, you never know what to think when you see a game like this. But this is just, it's supposed to be this way. It's an awesome concept. Voice acting is awesome, really, really good, and all the casting for the VAs was just also impeccably done. The goofy panther guy, the alligator dad, the teenage son, the homeless veteran rat. I'm actually here for it all. I'm not exaggerating my feelings for this game, and it all makes weird sense to me. Like, everything really works, and I don't think anything's forced or a strange choice, even though it's a really, really weird game. You're playing as an alligator who's also an investigator. See what they're doing here? But the character development, thank you. Character development comes out swinging so much harder than that, even within just the tutorial. You're not just an investigator, you're also a broke, shitty dad whose wife died. And your teenage raccoon son is always teetering on the edge of hating you, depending on the choices you're making. You haven't done the dishes or laundry in forever. There's like flies floating around the apartment. And your son mainly drinks soda for dinner. And you're just really not in a good place right now. But it's still really funny and lighthearted. This game gets crazy. It has so many twists and turns. It's got a fair amount of different endings. If you want to finish this game, it's a time commitment. This is not an evening of point-and-click adventure with a walkthrough that makes this shit last only like 2 hours. This is going to take you a decent amount of hours to complete, which for players like me who want a lot of gameplay when it's actually a cool original world, that's a good thing, and I do think this game respects your time and makes it worth it. I don't think it drags it out for the sake of doing so, and I think this game has a surprising amount to do and say in it. Content-wise, this game looks goofy, and it certainly is, but it's also really interesting plot-wise. Very, very weird and engaging, and it's pretty depressing and deep when it wants to be, but it doesn't beat you over the head with that. It still manages to deliver those themes in a lighthearted way, so you can ignore them if you want, and just play through like everything's okay and the government has our best interests in mind, just like we do every day in real life. That got a little dark, but the game isn't too dark. I'm actually careful about who I recommend games to within subgenres, especially if there are dark themes. But I actually think this game is for everybody, even people who don't like point-and-click adventure or beat-em-ups. I don't think of myself as a beat-em-up guy, but I love that part of this game. I think it's a great time. And if I had a teenage son or even a preteen son, I would actually make him play this. So I don't think it gets too heavy. It does share a fair amount of gameplay with all the classic point-and-click games, plus more. You can move around the screen freely pretty much anywhere on it. You can jump, you can get into fights if you want, and you even get to get experience points and level up. You level up, you can pick to enhance one of three stats. Your special attack, your health, or your strength. But yeah, the controller support is also great. It's recommended for this game, even if you're disabling all fighting and just doing the point-and-click part. It's really, just really smooth controller support. Everything works flawlessly, and I'm really picky about controller support in games. I tried it both ways, mouse and keyboard and controller, and I have like an Xbox-style PC knockoff controller, and I agree with the publishers. I think controller's the way to go on this, even if you don't do the fighting. Best of all, controls and settings-wise, this game has a special button that not only skips dialogue, but will only skip new dialogue to ensure you're not stuck monotonously replaying the game to make different choices. And if you skip along, you don't have any guilt of thinking, you know, am I going to miss anything I haven't already seen? And that's a two-part feature that seems basic for any branching story game. But as we unfortunately know, not even fully-fledged popular visual novels offering only reading and choices, not even those guys always have this feature.
Yeah.
Looking at you, hooked on you, still not over it. They almost made a perfect game. So good. But yeah, this game is thought that over, and it not only lets you skip, but it lets you skip with all the flashy features you could ever dream to make it easy to get those other endings and make new choices. It makes you want to come back. There was only one thing I didn't like in this game. A personal complaint. It's a personal complaint. It's how Brock, the lame old dad detective with a teenage son he doesn't understand. At first, he seemed like a curmudgeonly old man, set in his ways and annoying. But the more I got to know him, the more he reminded me of, like, all my friends from middle school and me. The way he dressed, the way he talked. And it didn't make a lot of sense to me, but then it clicked. I'm old now, and my generation, we're now the lame dads with the leather jackets and the fedoras and the yin-yang necklaces. He has one of those, you guys. We're the guys saying, you can't trust the government. Robots are going to take away our jobs. Streets full of crazies. I want to eat solid food, not this space-age crap. And it ended up being too relatable in a really delightful way. But like the curmudgeonly old man I am, I've now rambled endlessly about this game. So let's get to the rating, Brooke.
God damn. All right, it's $20. What do you think about it?
Oh, I thought it was more like $17, but that's not a big difference for me.
Well, it's $17.99 on sale right now, but it's $19.99 normally.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's really good. I loved it. And I played a shitload of point and click adventure games. I reviewed probably more of those than any other genre game on the show here. And I'm, like I said earlier, I'm always really careful in how I rate those. It's normally a buy it if you like point and clicks. It's a try it if you don't. In this case, it's just a buy it. No caveats. I think anyone can enjoy this game. Worth a shot to basically anybody. So don't sleep on this one, because you're going to like walking around tearing up the status quo in multiple ways as a cartoon gator with a funny hat on. I guarantee. There, I said it. And now I'm going to drop the link to Guarantee in the chat.
I guarantee.
Oh, I can't even do this guy's voice. It's so good. I think I did the timestamp right where I'll just switch to it. But God, I love that gator. How y'all are.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is Thymesia, developed by Overborder Studio, published by Team 17, released August 18th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Thymesia is a grueling action RPG with fast-paced combat and an intricate plague weapon system. In a kingdom where death spreads, plays a mysterious character known by the codename Corvus. Prey upon your enemies, wield the power of disease, and find the truth in your own memories. Tim, what is going on in Thymesia?
Oh, it's a Souls game. That's what's going on here.
Oh my god.
There's an easy shortcut for our generation.
this is Plague Souls, sort of, kind of. But it falls under, like, you know, Joe said, this game's $29.99, so this falls into the tier of, like, a B game, quote-unquote. This is not, like, a full-fledged AAA effort here. So, yeah, it looks, you know, it looks like a $30 game. Which is, it's fine. This game did not make a spectacular first impression on me. Like, as I started going with it, like, I wasn't really feeling the combat, and I wasn't really feeling the world. And I was just like, man, I don't know where I'm going to end up on this one. And where I ended up on this one was finishing it like a day later. Once everything kind of clicked into place. So yeah,
is it because it like clicked with you, or because the game's really short?
It's not long. And it did click with me. So both. So yeah, you play as the Corvus, codename Corvus, apparently. So your guy, you get in there, you have a basic saber combo. You have a saber that in your hand, your sword. You have a dagger, which you can use for parrying, if you time your hit of the left bumper properly, which is something that I traditionally am not very good at. So that's a mechanic for somebody else. You have this plague claw attack. More on that in a second. You can dodge. So there's some enemy attacks that are like more juiced up, where you can... This is going to sound weird. You stop them by whipping a feather at them. This is another like important defensive mechanic that I did not really fuck around with in this game, but it is there. And you have a whole thing, like, kind of what basically is your magic in this game is you sort of stealing weapons from enemies and storing them somehow in your person. What you're doing. So the way things work in this game is that you will hit a guy a bunch of times with your sword, let's say, and it will knock their life bar down a certain amount, but some of their life bar will still be green, and this amount of life they can recover if you leave them alone for long enough. And to knock that part of their health bar off, you need to didn't realize there was a Brooks face thing just floated across the Twitch chat. I was like,
oh yeah, that's distracting.
I didn't know. I was choice. Like, am I haunted? Is Joe haunted? What's going on? Either way, it's so Joe. you'll hit an enemy a few times with your sword, knock their life down, and then you want to follow up with your claw, which will knock off that green life bar to actually do permanent damage onto them. And you might ask, is it really fun to basically have to kill enemies twice to do double damage? And the answer is, I don't know if that's really the best choice. And it's also something that does not apply to your character, because if that were the case, I would be like, yeah, sure, that would be great if, like, I get hit a little bit and I can, like, smack him with my claw and steal health back for me. That seems like cool and fair, but no, this game is not about that. It's just a thing you have to do and something that you have to factor into your combat, and that's fine. But playing through, like, so there's only three areas in this game. There is sort of a dilapidated, like, plague-ridden tree town, which might call memories of the Valley of Defilement in Demon Souls or Blight Town, which are great places in those games that everybody loves. Though it's not that bad because there isn't poison everywhere, but it just reminds me of that, like, aesthetic. There is a, like, the Royal Garden is the second one, which ends up with you in kind of like a bloody library area. And then there's one that's a pretty generic fantasy fortress, is the third one. And they're not all available from the start. They kind of unlock. You go through one, and then the next one unlocks, and then the next one unlocks. Then after you complete the boss of the third one, then the final boss unlocks from there. However, along the way, you are also, like, once you clear a level, you then unlock a couple of side missions for that level, which I initially was kind of like, after I, you know, I played the first couple of them, and again, I was kind of like, well, these are just seem like they're a slight remix of the assets that were already in the level and aren't really adding too much. I guess it's like, okay, I can go here and grind a little bit, but didn't really seem, I kind of like ignored them for a bit, until I got to the end and came back around and realized, like, oh, if you do that stuff, you're like, you're there's kind of some very important stuff by going down those optional paths, like different areas and like big like bosses that you will not see elsewhere and are necessary for unlocking more endings of the game, which is cool. Though, and also, you know, like I said, it is a short game. It can be viewed as kind of like, well, you're just kind of padding things out with the levels a little bit there, but nah. So you got your guy and you beat up other guys and you get experience, which you only actually have three stats to pour them into in this game. You have like the strength for your saber attack. You have your health. You have your plague, which applies to your claw. So it makes your claw attack that takes down the green life bar do more damage. Every time you level up, you get a skill point, and then there's like quite a bit of skill tree stuff going on. There's stuff for, again, your saber attacks, for your dodging, for your claw attacks, for your feather attacks, for just like miscellaneous strategy. There's another one that I'm not thinking of. So it's cool to like get an additional bit of stats and have something that you can then put into you know, a skill to make your, you know, start customizing your character that way. And there is like, there's branching paths, and like going down one skill tree will lock out the other. So you do end up in a situation where you start customizing your character maybe more towards offense or defense, or using like the aforementioned feathers or just other things. For me, it was like, okay, I'm going to beef up my saber attack. I'm going to beef up my dodging, and I am pretty much pouring going offense, 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 offense. Because the best defense is they can't kill you if you're dead, if they're dead. And yep, on top of that, so certain enemies, and one of kind of the bummers about this game is most of the enemies are just guys with weapons, but this is a thing that plays into the whole weapon system of the game. There's like 20 or so different weapons, and you see a guy with a weapon, and if you charge up your claw attack and hit him, you will steal a like phantom magic version of that weapon, which will give you like a one use slot of that weapon. But also certain enemies, stronger enemies, which basically only stand out because their life bar doesn't go down as fast. they will drop shards of a weapon, which you can then use to unlock those weapons, and you can pick specific ones to equip. And like I said, there's 20 of them, and then like if you find more shards, you can power them up more, and it's a great way to customize your character. But let's just cut to the chase. You use the bow because it's bullshit, because it lets you hit enemies from afar, and it is super cheap and cheesy, and it's great. And
is ammo limited?
It's limited by your magic bar. Uh-huh. So, you know, I would get in like three shots, but here's the thing. So you're shooting them and you're taking down their first life bar. And then when I would use my claw to knock down that second life bar, I would be getting magic back out of them because magic is plague. So I'm sucking the plague out of them. So I have more plague power, and then I can shoot more arrows at them and rinse and repeat. and that's a lot of fun. And basically, like I said, I wasn't really feeling it through the first area and the first boss, but it wasn't until like I got a few weapons unlocked and I figured out how to equip them. That was like one thing, you know, all the numerous tutorials of the game kind of I missed or it glazed over, was like how to equip them. It's like, okay, once I started equipping those and I started getting a bit more power into my character, unlocking more stuff in the skill tree, like things started to feel like way better and really good. And despite, you know, a lot of the enemies being kind of samey and fodder, like I was just tearing through them so fast. And the game has a really brisk, more like Bloodborne-y pace to it, compared to Dark Souls and Elden Ring, which can be more methodical on average, I feel like. But that was me. That was my offensive style. You can definitely lean more into defense and parrying. There's actually a skill you unlock that instead of parrying, you will just block. And you will still take some damage, but if you're just not into getting the timing down, at least that is a thing you can do defensively, which I think is cool. And yeah, I wish the game had voice acting. That's another thing I wish the game had, that it does not.
I can't help but laugh every time we get a raid because of that sound clip of Jacob. It is awful, and I love it. I need more different sound effects for Twitch.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like I was, you know, pretty addicted to it for its short playtime. I think even with, I didn't see an actual hour counter. I can't imagine it was much more than five. I'm sure it was less than five for me to get to the initial ending. And then like, if you go through and you do like the extra, side quests and stuff to beat more bosses and unlock more ending possibilities, then you'll get up to you know, maybe around like 7-9 hours. But I don't have a problem with that. Like a brisk, fun, Souls-like experience. It ended up, despite my doubts at the beginning, it ended up kind of like proving that it had some cool stuff to bring to the genre that I enjoyed. It is a little rough around the edges. Like it's not, it looks fine. Like the art's good, but it's not a looker of, you know, the caliber of a AAA game.
Yeah.
It that's fine. Not every game has to look like that. It is good for $30 games to exist that don't meet those standards or those expectations, but are good and do cool things and are fun and don't take up, too much of your time.
Well, the game's $30. What's your official verdict?
And I think this one's also worth buying. Probably not going to be, if you're not already into Souls games, like this not is gonna not change your mind. It's going to change your mind. No. But if you are into Souls games, I think you're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for you,
that's
Tim.
It for me. It's bedtime. Oh my God.
Aww. So night-night. Tired.
Oh, I'm so night-night. I got home from work at 9:30 last night and went to bed at 10:30, and then I was back into work at 7 this morning.
Oh my God, that sucks.
Yeah, and now things will start to normalize, but I also have to get in promptly tomorrow for stuff going on. And then Thursday, all the teachers are at their damn union meeting, so I'll be able to relax a little bit in the morning, and then it will turn into pure hell in the afternoon.
Yay.
Furiously writing down, not teacher. I'm crossing out teacher in my notes. I got like a cork board with red string and like pins. I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, Tim, do you have any final words?
No, I do not. No, I'm ready for TP. Good night.
Have a good one. All right, next up, we got some fishing games to talk about, and fishing means sports. That means it is time for Sports Ball Shenanigans. Norg, take it away.
And now for Sportball Shenanigans
with Chris Taylor
on the SML podcast. We tried to get Bob Costas and he was all like, fuck no.
Yes, it is fishing time. It is sports ball time. The next game to talk about is Call of the Wild, The Angler, developed and published by Expansive Worlds. It released August 31st on PC for $29.99. From the creators of The Hunter, Call of the Wild comes a genre-defying fishing experience. Explore a vast and atmospheric open world in search of the perfect fishing spot. Ride the open waters alone or with friends and embark on your journey to become a master angler. Chris, Brooke, you two both dabbled in this one. What are your thoughts?
Who wants to start us out?
Chris, you can start.
I can start us out. I can at least describe the game first. Cool. So this is Call of the Wild. It's based on the book by Jack London about the wolf.
God damn it.
Who... All right, that's all I got. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. It's important to know the source material.
It really is, yeah. I mean, it helps if you've read the book at least to get the like the world building, even though the characters don't necessarily cross over. Anyways, so yeah, The Angler, which also sounds like a Bass Pro Shop superhero.
Yes.
So anyways, this is a fishing game adventure, kind of, where basically you create a character, you get immersed into this first-person world, where you explore, talk to, townsfolks, get side quests, explore the map, unlock, fast travel points, and, go fishing for experience points and money in order to buy better gear and then, catch higher level, fishies and stuff. It's basically Skyrim, the fishing
game. I was
going
to say it's Skyrim, oh my God, with fishing. Oh my God.
It is.
You beat
me
to the joke.
We all went the same place with it. Furiously amending my notes right now.
No, it seriously is. Like, it starts off with this intro that's like narrated by like a kindly old man, and Brooke's gonna get this. I don't know if everybody's gonna get this, okay, but in Texas, we have a fantastic fast food place called Whataburger.
Whataburger. My God.
And Whataburger's commercial spokesman, I've never seen him before, but he's this old man with like the old manniest cowboy voice. And when he describes like a chicken taquito or whatever, or whatever hamburger that they're selling, like, you want it. Like, it's so like, it's such good, narration work. And
oh,
that's,
my God, it's so
that's
true.
Exactly what I thought when I started this game. I was like, oh my God, hungry for Whataburger, man.
That's awesome. I'm going to try to find a link to his voice for the Twitch chat really quick. I'm like, yeah, I shouldn't
I've
let you
never
go
heard
first.
The commercial,
this isn't good
so
shit.
I don't know.
I'm going to find it.
Like, is it one of these kind of voices?
A little bit. More kindly. A little more.
Down home cooking.
That's getting there. It's getting
going
there.
Going fishing with my friends.
That kind of is it. And the guy's name is Clayton something or other. And you do actually meet him in person. He is one of the quest givers. Yeah, he gives you some of the quests. And here's the thing. Like, I'm talking about all this to get it out of the way so I can talk about the fishing, by the way. There really is fishing in this game, but like the first quest he gives you is to like go around the map and try to find like different trees that are infested with like with a certain kind of malady. Like, he's basically like, his job, like, your location is this a preserve, so like a nature preserve, and so, like, even though you're allowed to catch the fish, that, plot-wise, you're not allowed to keep the fish, and that's why. apparently, capturing and torturing animals is fine as long as you put them back. Anyways. But, he has you, like, looking around at trees and shit while you're, like, moving around this gigantic map that literally has mountains that you can climb. And, like, it has hidden fishing. It's, like, it's crazy. It does feel a lot like if Skyrim, because it's also very mountainous, the terrain. It's not wintry, but apart from that, I was just like, damn, this really is like Skyrim, the fishing game. I'm so impressed. So the fishing. Basically, you equip a rod just like you would a sword, and you can just whip it out and then, dunk your line at any point at which there is water. This may lead you to some surprises because, there could be fish in places that you kind of weren't expecting. There's a tall ass waterfall right at the top of which you can grab some fish. When you catch fish, you basically level up. When you discover new points on the map, you can also level up and you get money, and the money can of course go towards buying new stuff, which you have to go to the store and talk to your friend Sophia Taylor. She actually has a name. And she sells you, new stuff and everything. And she also gives you quests in the form of, like, both talking to her, and there's also bulletin boards that are kind of scattered across the center of the preserve where you can just go and look at a sticky note, and that basically gives you a quest. And it's really, really cool. The immersive nature of it. I'm quite impressed with that. So does Brooke have anything to, do you have anything to add to that before we talk about the actual fishing?
I don't know. I don't want to take any of your material. I kind of want to see where you go with it. But
okay.
That's before you talk about the actual fishing, I will just go ahead and say, before I say anything else, this game is cool. It's a huge labor of love. It's a big ass game. It's a cool and fancy game. That being said, if in-person fishing is a little boring to you and you're like me and that's why you play fishing video games, this might not be the perfect game for you, because this is fishing, dude. This is the real deal. This is what it's really like. And it's maybe too real. It's very impressive that they pulled this off.
I would say it's too real until you act like, again, like Skyrim. It's too real until you actually start talking to the human characters and you're like, yeah, these humans don't look great. Compared to how the landscape and even how the fish look, and like, you know, the first person graphics are great. And and by the way, you have vehicles in this game, including a truck that you can just drive around in order to, like, you know, explore more of the land. It's great. Yeah. So yeah, the fishing, we'll talk about that now. So fishing is thankfully tracked really well to a controller, as well as the keyboard and mouse setup.
Agree.
It seems to follow the standard conventions of, like, you know, basically shoulder button, you hold that down, you whip the stick back and then forth, and then let go of the shoulder button in order to cast, which is, you know, a classic move. You do kind of the same thing with the mouse, but I steadfastly refuse to acknowledge keyboard and mouse controls in my Steam games. I feel as a console gamer, I have a right to do so.
Yeah.
And fair. I'm going to say that, you know, not to spoil the next review, but this is where Call of the Wild is going to get points that the next game will not. But yeah, the controller tracks really well. You can invert the both the fishing controls and the movement controls. There's a lot of options for the controls. Anything you can think of is in the options as far as that goes. But so you cast it after, you know, selecting your equipment essentially, and different equipment is going to attract different kinds of fish. You're basically going to cast your line out there, and you're going to wait for something to you know, bite onto it, because the way fishing works is that you have a string with a hook at the end of it. You cast it out there with a stick, and a fish bites onto it. The hook pierces their fishy flesh, and then you reel them in and look at them with a very, very somber look on your face. Take a screenshot if you like, and then toss them back into the water. I actually tried to share a screenshot, but it didn't take. But you can just Google, like, any images of this game and see that every single character, no matter which one you create, of the, like, I don't know, six that are available, it's a very small template. Every time they catch a fish, they are just frown town. I have no idea what will make these people happy, but it is not fishing.
I haven't uploaded this anywhere, but I popped a picture of what my character looks like in our sweet SML chat. And I'm hideous, and I'm very upset that I caught this fish.
Yeah, that is exactly what every character looks like.
Yeah.
If you have a way to share that in the chat, that would be awesome.
I'm going to upload it somewhere real quick.
I want that to be, like, the episode image.
Honestly, that's, like, same.
Because, I mean, you know, I only caught, like, small fries, too, like what Brooke has here. Although, largemouth bass, that's nothing to sneeze at. But that's, you know, like, I've seen pictures of other people catching, like, record-sized fish, and they still have the same look on their face. It's so funny. So, yeah, like, the fishing part of it actually feels really good. You get a nice pop-up that comes up that says strike whenever the fish has bitten into the hook enough to cause it great physical pain, so that you can reel it in. I'm sorry that I'm being mean about fishing, but anyway. But you get the strike symbol, which is really helpful to people who don't, you know, because you're not really getting a lot of force feedback, because this is, even though it works with a controller really well, it's meant to be mouse and keyboard. So, you know, you get the flag, and then you can, you know, crank back your rod and start reeling it in, and you get a couple of different, you know, you get a pressure gauge that goes up and up depending on how, you know, much drag you've put on the line, which is that's the amount that you're basically pulling against the amount that the line can handle, because a lighter line is going to break if you pull too hard. And it's really easy to control this with not only slowing down your reeling action, but also you can take pressure off of, like, the drag is what they call it. And, yeah, if you keep that gauge down long enough, and, I mean, this can take up to, like, a full minute, especially with the weak-ass rod that they give you to start the game with.
Yes.
you'll think you're doing something wrong while you're reeling in the smallest fish in the world.
That's really true.
Yeah. Apparently, you know, this is a game that really, really wants you to upgrade your shit. But yeah, once you finally catch that fish, you know, by keeping that gauge down as much as you can, then you get your sad picture and, you know, you get to move on and hopefully collect enough stuff to go on to the next thing, and then go look for, you know, I don't know, Bruce Bark beetles or something.
Brooke, what are your thoughts?
Oh, man. So I'm really glad he wanted to talk about Clarence or whoever, the narrator. And I'm glad I found that clip that has his voice because it's so good. And I had such a roller coaster starting this game up. It starts out, the narrator is all, I don't know his name because I can't remember. He's like, my name is Clarence Thomas, and this here's my park. And I'm like, oh, God, what is this redneck shit about to even be about? Which, like, my heart is filling with dread only because it's making me self-conscious of my own, like, Florida Southern roots. And I'm worried we're about to get, like, some real toxic masculinity hunter vibes or something. But to my surprise, delight, and shame for assuming the worst just because I heard a man Southern drawl in a fishing game intro, that's not what happened. Cletus or whoever kept talking and was like, or I guess I should say our park because it belongs to all of us and we've got to take care of it. And it, like, slow rolls you into being about fucking getting off your ass and recycling and taking care of the environment shit so we can keep fishing in nice parks. And don't keep the fish, by the way. Throw them back, idiot. And I just really enjoyed that. And then after that, the fishing experience was so, so real. I've done a lot of fishing in my life, and it tracks, man. Joe, last week I kind of almost accidentally talked about this game before the embargo. And it's not that I thought that you specifically would like it, but I thought you would like the name of one of the achievements, which is, can you smell what the rod is hooking?
Oh, God.
And I loved it so much. Chris and my friends outside the show know that Dwayne Johnson's The Rock is, like, very close to my heart. He's like a second me to me. He's also my very first cosplay, my very first anime convention. And that sounds made up, but it's not. And I can prove it with photos, and I will. Nice. But yeah, I will go ahead and say, like, I was going to say the exact same thing. And I think anybody who plays this game that's played Skyrim will be like, this is fishing Skyrim. When they say this is an open world fishing experience, they are not fucking around. It is, like, scary, realistic environmental experience. And if you end up getting on the glass boat and doing, like, some river boating, that is what it feels like to be on a boat and fishing. That's what it looks like and feels like for sure. So did I personally have loads of fun playing it? Like, no, not at the fishing parts, because I'm kind of over that part of my life now. But it is a really insanely nice, refreshingly long and deep experience for IRL fishing lovers. You know, you catch a couple fish in the intro. You learn about casting, tension, bait. You wait for the fish to wear itself out before reeling in some cases. All that good stuff. Then you get to your next tutorial quest, and it's stuff like Chris talked about. It's like, climb the tower nearby and survey the area. Look around the park from the top. And you've got to take your little, like, first-person dude and go up the stairs to the tower and actually climb the tower and look around. Great news. I did hurl myself off the tower as soon as I got up there in the name of science. And I can tell you this game has no fall damage. So that's nice for me. Nice. Someone who proves every week that one thing I can never resist is climbing and jumping around all over shit in the wrong games.
Well, it is unlike Skyrim in that sense, then.
Yeah, true. So it's, like, better. No, just kidding. I thought it was such a neat game, even though I didn't like the fishing parts, because you really do have to wait. And it just, I don't know, you know. But I thought the walking around, the exploring stuff was cool. It was so much deeper than I thought. And this game has a giant map. Like, there's so much. I have no idea how many hours you put into this game to really explore that map. You even kind of, like, discover outposts and stuff.
I didn't do this myself, but I did look at another reviewer that basically took about 2 real world hours to cover the map and unlock most of the spots, like, on the outer perimeter.
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah, and by the way, and you know, this really should be stated, the the actual graphical environment is gorgeous. It looks so good. So.
Yeah, it looks awesome. You know, there are some games I've played that, like, I wasn't even that into because I just wanted to walk around a big, pretty open world. And, like, if I were still, like, desperately trying to find games to scratch that itch and not finding enough of them, this game would do that. So it's really cool. Chris kind of said everything I want to say about this game and the gameplay. I think he's right on the money. I just have one final note here. I wrote here that, you know, this game's not just for guys. We got a little something for the ladies. You can buy shoes. And they all look like shoes a Pokemon gym trainer would wear. So that's cool for me, too. No falling damage. I can buy shoes. There's a great time waiting in here for the right people.
I love that everything that, like, every note that you've covered is something I didn't even think to check for.
Well, you covered a lot of my initial thoughts, too, and you did a really good job, so we really tag-teamed this one.
See, we're doing like, a pro handshake right now.
Yeah.
Well done.
You know, while I'm patting myself on the back for shit, I just want to say that, this is a very Florida girl theme week for me. I took the fishing game because of my Florida pride, but also the Brock the Investigator game. I can't say no to a game with a gator. So I really honored my culture this week, and y'all have helped me do that.
Hell yeah.
Nice. Well, this game is sitting at $30. What do the two of you think?
I'm going to say buy it. This is not coming from an expert on the genre, but I do believe that from my personal experience, this is the best fishing game I've ever played.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that is worth $30. And it, there's, you know, the only couple of things, there are a couple, I think that they, the idea is that they might add some more DLC or some other stuff later. Like, there's some stuff that's not there. There's no way to, like, kind of, there's no, like, trophy room kind of situation where you can, like, look at your best, like, fish or whatever. Like,
oh, that'd be cool.
You can't, like, in game, you can't really, like, save, like, you can screenshot, of course, because it's a Steam game, but you have to do that yourself. Like, it doesn't, like, show you, like, a picture of your best largemouth bass or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it could use some stuff like that. There's a couple little features that are here and there that I'm like, you know, this could use this and that. And of course it, you know, I had to lower the specs on my PC even to get it to run at full speed because, yeah, this game is pretty resource heavy. Apart from that, $30, easy buy it.
Cool.
I agree. You know, my complaints with the aside and maybe, like, it not being the best fit for what I enjoy out of a fishing game personally, I wholeheartedly agree. Like, at $30, this feels like the Cadillac of, like, this type of fishing game. Like, it truly is offering something new. I think anybody who enjoys, like, Call of the Wild type games, like, this is just a fully fleshed out experience. And
describing something as the Cadillac of something else, that is we are pulling some old moves here.
We're old. We've lived our lives.
We're pouring out all this affection for a fishing game too. I can't believe this.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna put on my fedora.
So
it's a good game. And if I'm saying that, you know.
Cool beans.
Not because
go ahead, Burke.
Not because I'm the authority, but because I wouldn't normally like this and I think it's an achievement done.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Well, speaking of an achievement, I made an image for the show. Brooke, if you would like to check chat, I tagged you. I want your approval.
Nice.
Where is it? Miss it somewhere? I feel like, is it in the Twitch chat?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the JoeCam net.
Oh, I clicked the wrong one. I love it. It's so good. I'm really sad. I'm pouting so hard.
I actually flipped your frown upside down. So that's why it looks even stupider.
That's great. Oh my God. And I was worried, you know, I was condemning us to a cross-dressing Joseph Joestar with boobs, mouse pad, icon. So this is a wholesome, I love this.
Now we have a titmouse icon.
Yeah, that's great. I love that the titmouse is the size of the bass.
Quite a catch. This is great.
Oh God. Brooke, are you gonna stick around for the other fishing game or are you gonna head out?
I'm gonna head out. That's all I got.
That's all you got. Any final words?
Both these games were surprisingly cool. You know, I took them on both of my games. I took it on the, like, for novelty, and I was really impressed by both, and that doesn't happen every week, so
love when that happens. Week.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, night night, you guys.
Night night, Brooke.
Bye, Purnell. Bye, Chris. Bye, Joe.
Bye,
Twitch chat.
Good night, Moon.
Don't worry, Purnell. We'll get to you soon. But next game, got to keep the fishing going with Ultimate Fishing Simulator 2, developed by MasterCode, published by Ultimate Games, released August 22nd on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Are you a fishing fanatic? With Ultimate Fishing Simulator 2, you can prove it. Here's a fishing simulator with six picturesque locations where you'll catch more than 60 species of fish, including the giant tiger shark. Grab your rod. Adventure awaits. Chris, what's going on in Fishing Sim 2?
Okay, well, surprisingly, not the exact same thing as the other game, so that's nice. I will say I made a tactical error in like really wanting to cover both of these fishing games in the same episode because I had to keep them like separated in my mind, which turns out that's really hard to do. But we'll manage. So Ultimate Fishing Simulator 2 is another first person fishing game that's, you know, done up with modern graphics and designs and such. This one is actually the sequel to a game that was on all the consoles as well as Steam. So I'm really hoping that this one sees a console release down the line because I would love to play this on Switch. Having said, I haven't purchased the first game on Switch.
I'm going to guess after it comes out of early access, it'll
hit. Yeah, consoles. It's still early. And it is early. So we're going to address the elephant in the room right away. And the game, I think they just dropped like controller support in total. So controller support is very early right now. Some functions straight up don't work. So if you are going to check out this game at this point and you are like me and you can't do keyboard and mouse because it messes with your back, so you like have to use a controller, wait on this one. I'll just say that right away. However, I did play this with a controller and it was quite enjoyable. So let's talk about the enjoyable bits. So I'm really glad I got to do this second because now I can compare and contrast to the last game. this is a game where you basically, as opposed to being like the Skyrim of you know fishing games, I'm going to call this the Street Fighter 2 of fishing games because it has six locations that you know you go to in a sequence because there's a level up requirement to get to the next one, which of course the way to level up is to catch fish and also do side quests, believe it or not. But the side quests are largely, they have to do with also catching fish. It's just like, you know, here's an extra incentive to catch a specific kind of fish or a specific size or a specific volume or something. And so you have to level up to get to the next place, and those places include, as the last two stages, Russia and Thailand. And we all know that, you know, that Street Fighter 2 connection right there. Thailand.
Japan.
And I wish it would. Yeah, exactly. I wish it would do, like, the little airplane animation there. Yeah. So, yeah, jokes aside. So, yeah, basically, they drop you into the hub. Now, these are also, like, each stage is kind of a hub where you can walk around freely, but they're smaller than like the large hub that the other game is in. However, they do still have unlockable and, you know, fast travel points essentially that you can get to. So if you want to fish in this spot, you can fast travel to it and go fish there. If you want to fish in the other spot, then do that. You know, the idea, of course, is to cast your line out, catch some fish. In this one, you can choose to keep the fish or to let them go, both of which carry some kind of reward. You can basically sell a fish, even if you threw it out. Like, you can, I guess you still can get money for it. I don't know. I didn't really explore that a whole lot. I just kind of kept all the fish and sold them. And, of course, that is to get better gear, which lets you catch bigger and better fish, because you are working yourself up to sharks. So it's a little bit Animal Crossing in that sense, is that you're trying to collect them all, as well as, you know, you actually do get a trophy room in this game. So you're basically trying to fill up this really creepy liminal space when you look at it in the beginning of the game. For some reason, they let you walk around in the empty trophy room if you choose to before you've even caught your first fish. So it's just kind of like this weird empty aquariums and whiteboards and stuff, like, and displays. Anyways, you basically go around and try to catch all the fish in, like, these places. Now, purchasing stuff is a little more impersonal. You do it from the menu rather than talking to a person. I don't know that there are any people to talk to really in the game. So it's a little bit more focused on like the fishing than the you know, simulating any kind of other people, which could be a benefit because, again, the previous game showed us that, you know, you could make the prettiest fishing spots in the world, but, you know, you have to then make a human and suddenly you're faced with some limitations. So yeah, the actual fishing in this game works a little bit differently than in, you know, Call of the Wild. I forgot the angler. I'm going to call it the angler now. So instead of doing the thing where you hold down a shoulder button and like flick the stick, you actually just straight up hold down a shoulder button and it does a timed gauge just like most golf games. So you can basically use a timed gauge to cast out your rod and reel and stuff. And the other thing that's like the major difference is that this game actually provides you with an underwater camera. So for the first time in a fishing game that I've played, you can actually watch the fish and you can watch the area around your bait and stuff to see if any fish are even around. So that really gives you like a good chance to kind of like, you know, be like, well, this is worthless. I should draw in a little bit or just give up entirely on this spot because there's nothing around here. Or you'll be like, oh, okay, I can see this guy's coming up. It feels like cheating, but honestly, it ends up being like pretty useful, especially, you know, because it's not the most, they don't have the strike flag that comes up, so you kind of have to just know when you're when it's time to actually start pulling it back and reeling it in and, you know, fighting the fish and stuff. And funny enough, the pressure gauge and also the draw lake meter works almost exactly the same way as in the angler. So I imagine that this must be some kind of industry standard. But yeah, like I said, once you catch a fish, you get your, you know, you once again get a super sad looking character posing with a fish. It's a little different than the other game, but it is still there. Your characters do not look happy to be fishing that day. But yeah, and you know, like I said, the fish then it gets added to the dictionary for fish. I failed the pun. Portmanteau rather. and then you just kind of keep on moving, and like I said, you gain levels, and as soon as you hit a certain amount of levels, you can then move on to the next environment and start fishing from there. So it's a little bit more cut and dry than the other game. The leveling up is a little more robust. For instance, you actually do have a skill tree that you can use. So it's RPG-like in that sense. So, you know, you can kind of go more towards, you know, one talent rather than another. I didn't really gain a whole lot of levels in this one though, so I can't really speak to what all you can do with the skill tree, but it is there, and so your leveling up aficionados are going to be appreciative of that, as well as, like I said, inching your way towards catching sharks in Thailand. So all good.
And completing your fish diction. I got one for you. Fincyclopedia.
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you. That's great. That's great. Aficionados. Thank you, Carnage, for catching that.
Yeah. These are all pretty terrible.
Yeah. And by the way, both games feature multiplayer. This one seems a little more robust on the multiplayer, in the sense that the front menu does contain an online kind of trophy hunter kind of deal. It's not up yet because the game's still in early access. You know, none of the games are active for me. They were literally like, we have no games for you today. So, I think the game releases tomorrow, right? As of this recording.
The official release was the 22nd.
Okay.
On early access.
Right now there's not a whole lot going online, but they do have a whole online section that will be worth checking out if you're a multiplayer aficionado.
Well, do you have an official verdict for this?
Oh, yes. I'm going to go ahead and also call this one a buy it, for different reasons than the other game. It's less about the exploration, more about the fishing and the more fishing. I really like what this one offers. I think it's a little bit more for classic fishing game fans. Like I said, you know, the different, you know, you don't get to drive around in a car, but you do get to drive around in a boat. Like I said, it feels a little less of an exploration adventure with, you know, that's 80% fishing. And it's more like this is like 95% fishing. Like no. It really does focus more on that. And at a lower price point than the other game as well, like this might be more your speed because, you know, if you're just looking to just unwind, man. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give that a buy it.
I hate all of us. Next game to talk about, Destroy All Humans 2 Reprobe, developed by Black Forest Games, published by THQ Nordic, released August 30th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Crypto is back with a license to probe. The alien invader returns groovier than ever, and now with genitals? Experience the swinging 60s in all its chemical-induced glory, and take revenge on the KGB for blowing up your mothership as you uncover the schemes of your enemies. You'll have to form alliances with members of the very species you've come to enslave. Purnell, what is going on in Destroy All Humans 2 Reprobed?
Now probing, I guess. Also a game. So, I'm not going to sit here and try to explain the narrative to you because it's... I don't know if it's because I didn't play the first game or if the narrative is just that bonkers, but for the most part, I'm just like following the yellow brick road. It's like, hey, go track this guy down. Go track this mutant down. Align yourself with this person and save that person. I'm just connecting the dots. But I can say that I'm having fun doing that because this is a game that I remember back on the old like PS2 Xbox era that I always wanted to try, but just never got around to doing so. So what I end up getting out of this is it's like early age GTA type games. Early age being like GTA 3, not 1 and 2, but with a bit of a twist, because instead of walking around as a human committing crimes, you're walking around as an alien who just by being spotted will already trigger the alarm to the police and people freaking out by just seeing you. So whereas in a normal game like a GTA type game where you're running around in the overworld, you usually just don't commit crimes. In this game, you get to do some fun things to stay unnoticed. You can steal bodies. So if a character's walking around the street and you want to blend in, you kind of creep in from behind the bushes, tap the Y button repeatedly, boom, you steal their body. If someone sees you do it, you can kind of give them like a, not so much a brain melt, but you can kind of like hit them with a Wii or something that will allow their brain to kind of like lose focus for a bit, giving you time to walk away. Though, of course, you wanted to pop their brain like a grate, you could do that too, but it's a little less inconspicuous when you do that.
Yeah, but it's more fun when you do that.
Oh, don't get me wrong. If I don't have anything to be concerned about, oh, I'm going to be popping because you do get, because you actually need that in order to like refill like your cloak gauge and stuff like that. So sometimes you'll be doing it for necessity's sake too. But as you're running around this game, you'll generally be tasked with a variety of like different missions, whether it be main missions or side missions. And when you take them on, for better or worse, when you take on a mission in this game, it locks you in to like a certain area. So like if you're just running around without any mission, you can explore whatever like, the entirety of the map you're on. Because on a beautiful note in this game, they give you from the very beginning, you pretty much get ultimate mobility in this game. You can dash, you get a jetpack for flying around, though it has limited charge. You can still pretty much get anywhere you need to or want to just by using those two things. And you can upgrade them too, so even better. But once you take on a mission, they kind of narrow your scope down a bit more. They might just straight up say, you can't leave this area until this mission's done. Which, I guess it helps you maintain your focus at least. But sometimes I'm like, no, I see a thing in the distance. I want to go get it. And the game's like, no, you can't do that yet. You got to wait till your mission's done. So, you can't, say, steal cars in this game like you would expect in a normal like game like this. And I only say that because I personally, on multiple occasions, hijacked a body and then tried to steal a car. And the game's like, nope, no dice. But eventually you can unlock saucer spawn or telepad ports, and you can call a flying saucer in to travel around pretty quickly on the map. Of course, but thing is, before you get into the saucer, you are allowed to use that same pad to upgrade your character. So every time you complete a mission, you'll acquire I guess like this, these nanotypes. And for a certain number of them, you can upgrade your weapons. You can upgrade your suit sometimes. But mostly your weaponry and your, like, you know, some of your armor elements. And that'll just give you, like, you know, better options or abilities with those things. In addition to that, which I believe, I actually kind of find to be pretty fun, you can use that saucer that I mentioned once you boarded it or whatever to actually abduct people. Not just destroy buildings, which you absolutely can do, but you can abduct people and then put them into a blender and get upgrades for your character, too. The types of people you suck up matter, though, because for each recipe to upgrade your character further, it will require a specific combination of people, like 20 KGB agents, 20 hippies, and 10 police officers. Something like that.
Nice.
And you might find yourself thinking, that sounds annoying, and like, I gotta collect all these people. It's really not. The game will straight up tell you, this is what you're looking for, and you sometimes pop up on the map, this is where they are if you decide to track it. And it's just a matter of just flying over them, running that suction beam, and just pulling everybody up. It ends up being pretty fun to do. The missions in this game as well, when you're not doing, like, you know, just killing time, looking for nanotypes, and again, like, sucking people up here, like saucer beam. The missions aren't what you've not seen before. They're pretty straightforward things, like infiltrating bases, kill X number of people, follow this guy. But I kind of like the goofiness of it, because again, you're controlling an alien who's trying to take over the Earth, but he's fighting the KGB at the same time. Kind of weird little vibe there. So it adds a little bit of an extra spin to the game, and it also doesn't hurt that the main character sounds a lot like Jack Nicholson. I'm guessing that's intentional.
Yes.
I love that for it. And it's funny too when you like say, like, you know, take over the body of a woman and then use that body to go talk to a person, and you still sound like Jack Nicholson. The character never just goes, why do you sound like that? I think one time the guy did, but I wasn't sure if he was saying it because I was a woman or if he was just like freaking out. But I still thought it was pretty funny. I was like, why? What? He's like, you know, don't ask questions. Just give me some answers. but I gotta say, like, I've actually been having a lot of fun playing around with this game. The weaponry even is strange. Like, even though you eventually do get some guns that feel like just typical pew-pew guns, the majority of the weapons you get are all, like, weird-type guns, like electric chain guns and a weapon that's specifically meant to make things bounce around. But they all serve their own purpose, and I have been switching around them. You get the free love wave. I kind of like that, too. Just make people dance and get, like, you know, high. It's nippy little things. And you just keep getting new guns as you go. Of course, obviously, one of them is going to be the anal probe. Just get that out the way. But it's, I just like goofing around with the game and exploring the world, hearing the dialogue when you read the people's minds and hear what they have to say. This is a quality game. And I will say the only issue I had, I mean, I had a few like weird glitches where like a guy might get stuck in the terrain or something like that. There was one early mission where I was like, fight this guy. And he spawned multiple times when I was fighting him. And one of his spawns, he kind of spawned into the wall. I don't know how the hell that happened. But when I did the restart mission, it wasn't a big deal. I just blew him up again because aside from when you're fighting the inevitable monster type characters, which I'm not going to tell you where they come from. Just know there are monsters in the game, too. The humans are almost like a joke, but as they should be if you're a freaking, like, you know, gun-toting alien running around. The humans shouldn't be much of anything. But so it wasn't much of an issue for me to just redo that mission, and I haven't had any issues with that since, but still worth pointing out. You said so like you played a little bit of it too. Did you mess with this too?
I have not had any time with this. I picked it up. I bought it. I picked up the special bundle for $54.99 that has like the costume packs and that has comes with like a multiplayer game as well. But no, I've been playing Saints Row. So,
but overall though, I think this game is a fun time. If you're not the type that can get down like some crude humor, maybe that might change a bit for you because, I mean, the alien is about horny as all get out. So every 5 seconds he's making some kind of reference, like, I got my genitals back. I love sex or whatever. But for the most part, I had fun with this. It was funny to me. I enjoyed playing it. And I think other people who would be interested in this would enjoy it, too.
Now it's $40, your official verdict.
I think it's a genuine buy. Though I guess one more thing I should mention is I did look up what the original game looked like, and they really did a good job upping this game. Like, the original game looks like a PS2 game.
Yeah.
This one does not. This one looks nice. So they did a decent job on the upscales, not just, you know, smoother graphics.
Now, the next game we're going to see if it follows suit is Pac-Man World Repack, developed by Now Production, published by Bandai Namco, released August 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Pac-Man arrives home on his birthday to find the ghosts have kidnapped Pac-Man's family and ruined his party. Off to the rescue, Pac-Man sets out to Ghost Island. Purnell, this is a remake of another game from PS2, Xbox, GameCube era. What are your thoughts on it?
Now, this is another game I kind of always wanted to try back then, but didn't. And I had no excuse either, because I did buy Pac-Man World 2 because it came with Pac-Man Versus back in the day. But I just kind of Pac-Man
Versus. Hell yeah, the Pac-Man Versus.
Yes, it's so damn good. Also, guys, if you're hearing this, I know you're going to eventually make a Pac-Man World 2 repack. Please do Pac-Man Versus as well. You can do it.
I think still, Nintendo has the rights to Pac-Man Versus.
Damn it. That's what
as we well they should, since they got Super Mario to narrate it.
Yeah, I think that's some kind of weird collaboration they did with Nintendo, because it's never been on any other platform.
Well, I mean,
any other competitor platform, like it hasn't been on Xbox or PlayStation. It's just been on Nintendo platforms. So,
well, get them to let you do it on the Switch, guys. I want Pac-Man Versus back, not that battle royale trash. Anyway, enough sidetrack. Let's talk about the actual game here. And Pac-Man World is actually pretty fun too. It is essentially a 3D platformer starring Pac-Man. It doesn't have too much in the form of complications either. Pac-Man's move repertoire is pretty straightforward. He can run. He can jump. He can butt stomp. He can have the button held down. It's kind of like a rev up rolling dash. He can throw power pellets if you stockpile them. Just pressing A will throw one. Holding down A will charge up like a power pellet bomb, and it blows up for a couple. The power pellets themselves are not unlimited use. You collect them on the stages by just finding them littering all over the map. The game loop pretty much consists of going to 6 different worlds, each of which containing about 4 or 5 levels. And in those levels, you are tasked with pretty much getting from the beginning to the end. But amongst each world, somewhere within one of the stages, you'll find a key and a cage containing one of Pac-Man's family members. So you will be tasked with trying to save them while also just generally exploring the stages themselves. It's an interesting game, too, because, again, like I said earlier, at the core, this is a pretty straightforward game. Like, they haven't done anything that reinvents the wheel of 3D platforming. But I found it to be a lot of fun. And I think a large part of that is the fact that Pac-Man's movements are fairly snappy. The levels themselves are actually pretty freaking challenging, too. Like, this is not easy because it's Pac-Man game. They put some thought into making these levels difficult. But also, for better or worse, another thing I like about the game is how they ended up transferring the fruit use in this game. Because for those who don't remember, Pac-Man was a game where he ran around mazes avoiding ghosts. And he also had to collect fruit for bonus points. Lastly, in those games, he couldn't actually hurt the actual ghost characters unless he ate a power pellet, which allowed him to temporarily turn the tide on his foes and consume them. They translate all of that into this game pretty much to the letter. As you're running around maps, you'll occasionally come across enemies that are not ghosts. Those enemies you can actively fight back against and kill by using a butt stomp or power pellet toss. However, if you come across a ghost, you cannot hurt them, and you are forced to run away from them until you somehow manage to make a power pellet appear on the screen. Not necessarily just the ones I mentioned you can throw. I mean, like, the big one that actually made you, you know, get invincible or whatever. But you get a power pellet, you eat that power pellet, and then for some limited period of time, you become like a giant Pac-Man, and you consume the ghosts and kill them. I'm pretty sure there's some kind of bonus points associated with that, aside from the typical 1600 for getting all of the ghosts in a combination. But I barely paid attention to that. I just want to kill them all because they're there and they're pissing me off. Secondly, they're such a pain in my tuchus, they are. The next thing about that, aside from that, is the fact that as you're running around the levels, when I mentioned earlier about the fruit, you'll come across a number of gates that are locked up. And you cannot get through those gates unless you find the corresponding fruit that is locked the door as the key to unlocking the door. And behind those doors, you'll come across a variety of different things, whether it be a switch, letters that spell out the words Pac-Man for bonus points at the end of the level. More fruit. And probably my favorite thing that you can discover in each of these rooms, a maze token. When you pick up the maze token, you actually unlock a new level kind of style similarly to the classic style of Pac-Man with using this game's graphical concept. So, for example, one level will just have you running through like a hedge maze with a top-down view. Pac-Man is running from the ghosts. He eats the power of pellets, blah, blah, blah. And if he completes the entire maze, he'll get a clear. He'll come out and it'll be good to go. And you'll unlock that maze to play around with in maze mode, too. Now, one thing I like about this, though, one thing I really appreciated, was that these aren't just typical Pac-Man mazes with a 3D coat of paint. They actually add some sorts of, like, occasional obstacles that you wouldn't have found in a traditional Pac-Man game. Like, you might find a level where lava's spewing out of the ground. You can only run across a tile when the lava's not coming out.
Yeah, rocks fall on you. Fucking rocks killed me a couple of times.
Oh, absolutely. They suck. But that's kind of what's cool about it, too. It's like, they could have easily just said, here are some simple mazes. But they were like, nah, let's use some of the level gimmicks that you come across in the main game and slap them into the Pac-Man mazes, too. It kind of makes me wish they did more of stuff like this for, like, arcade Pac-Man sequels. Like, hey, here comes Pac-Man 32-bit, or whatever the hell they would want to call it. But now there's a bunch of mazes with obstacles you wouldn't typically see in a Pac-Man. But thankfully, we can unlock them here as a tasty tidbit of a bonus. At the end of a set of levels, you'll eventually come across a boss character. And I do like the fact that the bosses in this game don't follow the traditional stomp three times to defeat them rule. Sometimes they have like typical, like, they'll have like a battle gimmick that you have to exploit, taking multiple hits, and throughout the battle they might change it up a little bit to make you kind of rethink how you're doing things as you go about the fight. So even the boss battles are actually fun in a way that isn't rote for the genre.
No, I don't know about you, but I'm not a fan of the Anubis battle, the second boss of the six worlds. I'm struggling with them. I've died like six times in a row. I would quit out, go earn some extra lives, go back. I just can't beat Anubis, and I am struggling. And I don't want to put it on easy mode.
Don't do it. Don't do it. We'll consult on this later. I would like to try to help you beat this Anubis.
It's the one where you have to like hit the run on the four switches, and then his force field drops, and you got to roll into him to hit him four times. That son of a bitch.
So it's basically just you're having trouble getting in before losing all your health and dying?
Yeah. Yeah, because by the time that final phase comes around, you're struggling with life, and there's not enough ways to earn it back, and those goddamn cyclones he throws at you, oh.
They make you work for it.
Yeah, you got to work for it.
I got this odd feeling that it won't be as hard for me as that stupid mine, though. You remember the manic mine levels where it was like, hey, you're running in the dark sometimes. But what they didn't say is like, no, we actually meant dark. It is fucking dark in this room. And good luck seeing where you're going.
It's got cool lighting effects, too, for, you know, this being just like a remaster. The visual effects and the lighting, really good on this game.
I agree. Like, this is a legit product here. It's fun. It's snappy. Again, the moves, it's not a complicated game. So if people are like, I don't know if I can handle this game. I don't want to have to remember a bunch of moves. Well, Pac-Man's move list isn't all that. It's not a lot going on with him. The game, especially to win based off of understanding the level you're playing on and, you know, taking advantage of the things that they offer to you while also being aware of the dangers in the level. But you don't have to sit there and worry about remembering combinations of moves or anything nonsensical like that. So give this game a try. It's fun. I like it. I wouldn't mind seeing more games. It's just like I said, bring Pac-Man World 2 to the modern consoles.
I'm sure that's going to be next. But yeah, $30, your official verdict.
Easy recommendation for a buy. This game is great. Nice heyday to the 3D platformer era, too.
Cool. All right, next up is Kid Ball Adventure, developed by Spoonbox Studio and Rattleika Games, published by East Asia Soft, released August 24th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Enter a fantasy world of bouncing balls and magic castles in Kid Ball Adventure, a 2D precision platformer where risk is balanced with great reward. Take control of Kid Ball as he pursues those who captured his love through treacherous castle dungeons. Chris, what's going on in Kid Ball Adventure?
Kid Ball Adventure. Well, I guess you play as the titular Kid Ball. Kid Ball is in love with a pink ball who apparently doesn't get a name. That's way to work backwards there, fellers. But yeah, so the intro to the game basically plays out, I'm going to say, almost note for note, like Ghosts and Goblins. They're both, on a date, kind of like overlooking the local creepy castle. And then the bad guy swoops in, which is also a ball with like a knight helmet. That's the bad guy. Swoops in on a circular dragon, kidnaps unnamed pink ball, and then flies to the nearest castle. So your job is to bounce through the castle and try to rescue your beloved, who knows what her name is. I don't even know if it's her. I just know it's pink. But yeah, Kid Ball is Kid Ball because he's got a backwards baseball cap on. So we've established the character there perfectly. No notes there. So the way the game plays out is that it is a challenge puzzle platformer, you versus Spikes. And the catch to this one is that Kid Ball is always bouncing. Kid Ball is a perpetually bouncing basketball-like character, so in getting through the levels, you have to time it with the arc of your jumps. That basically means, if you're going to bounce over a spike, you got to make sure you bounce over the spike, but then you've got enemies that have, back and forth kind of motions as well, so you got to time it to avoid them. You also have little platforms, elevators, and stuff that go up. The whole point of it is to collect a key, which then opens a door, and then you go through the door, and then the next level. Apart from that, there's also jewels, crystals, something like that you can also collect. They look a little bit like rupees. And if you collect 10 of them, you get an extra life to add to your stock of 10 lives that you start every game with. It's very likely that you're going to need all 10 of these lives once you get a little bit of, a little bit further into the game because, death is very, very immediate and also respawning is immediate. Such that you can actually probably end up dying two or three times if you're spawning right above a trap that you don't dodge like immediately. It's, kind of one of those type of things. But like I said, with the jewels, you get the extra lives, and every 5 levels, there's a checkpoint. So if you lose all of your lives, you don't lose a lot of progress if you lose all your lives. You just have to replay up to like 4 levels. There's no bosses or anything. Every 10 levels, you run into the bad guy and he flies into another castle and you just chase him into that castle. And, it changes up the background and the background music a little bit. And of course, challenge ramps up as you go along. I don't know how many levels there are total in this game, but considering that there are multiple worlds and each one has 10 levels in it, there's quite a bit of content here.
I think the store page says 100 challenging stages filled with traps and deadly enemies. It also mentions that it has a time trial mode for the true masters, offering classic, no death, and hell day variants.
Yes. So if you,
that scares me, hell day in an already tough platformer.
I don't know what that means. They call it, there's a doomsday mode, which is just extreme speed. And then the no death mode is hardcore mode, so I guess you just can't die in that mode. And then your classic time trial. I don't know if doomsday mode is the same thing as what you're talking about.
Probably. I'm guessing it's just lost in translation or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just an extreme speed variant of like the normal gameplay, which, playing it right now, it's faster. It's like, it's not extreme or anything, but I could see where in the harder levels it would be a challenge to play like this, but it's not like extreme speed. I would say it's 1.5 to 2 times faster. So cool. But yeah, there's that content as well, which lets you replay the levels all in a row. And again, they put the timer up so that you can have your little speed runs and stuff. If that's your thing, it's not mine, but that's okay because I found this game to be pretty fun. It's a classic precision platformer with a twist and a bounce.
Well, it's $5. What do you think?
I'm going to plant this in the fuck it, why not territory because I can't, it's always hard to recommend, like, you know, a platform room, you know, based puzzler that's just you versus spikes versus enemies that walk back and forth. You know, there's a lot of those. But if that is kind of your thing, then this one does nothing wrong. So it's a solid entry into that subgenre of, you know, of gaming. So, you know, while I'm not going to say that anything truly stands out in this apart from, you know, the general gimmick, I'm going to say it's well put together and worth your time if that is your time and your budget.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Yars Recharge, developed by Atom Vision and Sneaky Box, published by Atari, released August 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $9.99. Shoot from afar or get nibble away up close and personal in a boss rush, bullet dodging revival of the 1982 Atari classic Yars Revenge. Take on 60 unique enemy encounters alone or with a friend in local co-op. Pernell, tell us about your time with Yars Recharged.
No, there are no parts in this game, unfortunately. Very sad to hear that. But still fun. So I never got a chance to play the original version of this game, but it was kind of funny when I told a friend I was reviewing it. He was like, that game, he just started whacking nostalgic all over the place. Like, this is a great game. You should enjoy it. I hope it's fun. Let me know what it is. Blah, blah, blah. And
you somehow never played Yars Revenge?
Never played Yars Revenge.
I was not an Atari kid either. I didn't play Yars Revenge until I was in my 20s at least.
Wow.
The funny thing is, like, I actually had an Atari, but I had very few games for it. I had like Pac-Man and like Pole Position.
Oh, good thing you had Atari Pac-Man. Thank God for that one.
Oh yeah, right. I have that one too. Yeah, actually, Yars Revenge is one of the few Atari cartridges that I do have.
You have it.
Yeah,
no, you have. Yeah. But you did say you played it in your trial, but you got to play it. But you said you played it, so
yeah. But, I have played it.
Well, hopefully you'll enjoy this game then too, because it seems to be pretty darn faithful to the original from what he was describing to me. There are two modes in this game. They keep it pretty straightforward, really. The arcade mode is you progressing through a series of stages. I didn't get to the end, so I don't know how many there are, but the way the game flow works is that you are a bug. I assume your name is Yar. Could just be Bug Boy. I don't know. But the goal of every level is that you will be on the screen filled with, like, I guess, like hexagons, honeycombs, if you will. And within those honeycombs, there will be guns. Some are tiny turrets, and then at least one will be a giant, like, mega core turret. And as the game progresses, the core will slowly issue commands to the turrets, enlisting their aid and firing bullets at you. And your character's goal is to try to get through the defensive honeycombs that are blocking your access to them, to the guns and turrets, and blowing them up. Now, the tutorial said you can use the right thumbstick to fire bullets, but oddly enough, outside of mission mode, I was never able to pull that off. I just got to spoil what the next mode is, but we'll get to that. In the main mode, oddly enough, the only thing I was ever able to do, whether it be up close or afar, is use the right thumbstick to nibble at whatever was in front of me. There's a tooth icon that indicates you're biting down, but what you do with that is you can use the bite through shield defenses. You can also use the bite turrets as well. And as you do this, you will actively not only do damage to the shields and the turrets, but you'll also build up a gauge on the left side of the screen. Max that gauge out, and a giant cannon will appear on the left side of the screen that you then fly into, and you can manipulate it by scrolling it up and down the screen to fire 2 to 3 ginormous bullets. And those bullets are intended to do more damage to shields and damn near insta-kill turrets. And usually like 2 or 3 shots from it will kill the big bad turret if they get clear shots off on it. You pull that off, the level's cleared, you progress to the next one. Wash, rinse, repeat until you're at the end of the game, I presume. But as you progress through the levels in arcade mode, the bullet patterns change, the honeycomb patterns change, and even the attacks start to change. So it's not necessarily just more of the same throughout the game. They make things harder and harder progressively until either you die like I do, or you succeed like I don't. But it's still engaging, nonetheless. It's a lot of fun to mess around with and play. Even though, like I said, it's very arcadey, being that it's, you know, arcade mode and based off of a remake of a game that was kind of arcade styled. So I have no gripes with that. Just something worth noting for people who are like, I need a game where it's like a narrative. I want Yar to talk about where his missing father is after every level or whatever. You're not getting that. It's just Yar. He's on a rampage for something. You don't know. Get those points. In addition to the normal mode, there's also a mission mode as well, though. Kind of like what Gravatar had when I reviewed that a couple of months ago. But in this mode, similarly, there will be a series of stages where it might be like a specific goal they might have you to do, fulfill, or just simply beat the stage like you would normally. And the level itself might have a specific like gun layout or turret layout or condition structure built around it. But if you manage to pull off a stage completion, the game will give you a score for that mission, and it'll unlock another mission for you to keep doing messing around with until you clear every mission in that mode. And I honestly kind of prefer that to the arcade mode, because if you find yourself thinking, well, I want a little bit more, something a little more structured, this is what that would be for you. Say, okay, I completed this mission, unlock this mission, complete this mission, unlock this mission, until you may or may not complete the game. Good luck, sucker. But there is a multiplayer mode available on this mission mode for sure, so if you find yourself thinking, you know, I wouldn't mind having a friend helping me with this, well, you can get that friend in there. I don't have friends, so I don't know what that happens as far as your score is concerned, but I wager it's two of you gnawing on the same shields, so you know, two is better than one in regards to evening the odds against the adversaries. All in all, this game, it's fun. I enjoy it. It's not going to be a meaty game that's going to have you, you know, getting hours upon hours, 40 hours of fun, unless you become really obsessed with beating some high scores. But the time you do get out of it, I think, will be a nostalgically fun trip that is sure to please. And I'm saying this as a guy that, again, never played the original Yar's Revenge. I just knew of its existence from, you know, game magazines and people talking about it on TV or whatever. So I'm glad I was able to play it in this manner so I could finally experience it in some manner for myself.
We got to get you to play Yar's Revenge.
At this point, what would be the point? I got Yar's Recharged.
I wonder, like, is it on one of the Atari flashbacks?
I should have been checking that. I think it is on flashbacks.
There's three of them on Xbox. I don't know what games are on which, but
well, I have the big collection on Switch. I can take a look at this right quick. Let's just have some dead air while I do that.
Yeah, we'll just. What's going on, guys?
Unique.
I was going with an elevator theme. My end, like, do 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 do
do. But luckily, Atari starts with an A, so I was able to find it very quickly in my collection.
Yeah, but Yars has a Y, so you're gonna have to scroll all the way.
How my brain was admittedly thinking, oh, he's going to go to the shelf and pull the box off the shelf and look at the back of it. He's like, nope, I'm scrolling, baby.
Well, the Atari collection, the flashback collection on Switch has, what, like 120 games?
Yeah, something really? Like that. And, yeah. And Yar's Revenge is there. It's the very last one.
There
and
you
Yar's
go.
Return. Yar's Return is there, too.
So it had a sequel.
Two Yar's games. Yeah.
There you go, Purnell. Pick up Atari flashback collection on the Switch and play yourself some Yar's Revenge so you can compare what this is.
So twice the not pirate are in that game. Interesting.
Oh, man. All right. $10, your verdict.
I think it's actually a solid buy it as well. As long as you know what you're looking for getting it, or as long as you know what you're getting going into it, I do believe you'll have a great time. It's fun.
Cool.
Nibble. That's an addictive thing, too. I like the nibbling on everything.
Cool. Works for me. That is it for tonight. Made it through.
Yeah!
Made it through.
Music. What should we play to end this episode? Should we play some more from Revo? Or do you have an idea?
I don't know, like, I'm sure one of our video game band friends have come out with like a good Ninja Turtles track. I know 1UPs have a couple of
we'll play some Ninja Turtles. Sorry Drew, we'll get you next week. But Ninja Turtles,
they got that one of the sewer level from TMNT 2. That one's really good. And then, God, how many people have done sewer surfing? There's like a ton of sewer surfings out there.
Too much sewer surfing, if you ask me. Where are the cops when you need them?
Oh, Lord.
Stop all this damn surfing.
Damn kids and their surfings.
We are old.
we'll play some Ninja Turtles. And anyone have any final words to end the show?
I mean, you can only end the show with Cowabunga.
Cowabunga.